This program is provided by a trusted partner of the church and is educational, inspirational, and uplifting. It does not necessarily represent the official position of the church.
I think we can understand that, well, he was human, yes, but not human after all. He was human because of all. And he was a divine prophet.
Coming up next, the persona of Joseph Smith. What was he like?
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Channel now presents the Joseph Smith Papers.
KJAZZ Television, in cooperation with the Church History Department of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, presents this weekly series highlighting the research of scholars and historians as they prepare for the publication of the Joseph Smith Papers. And now your host, Glenn Rawson.
Whether it's the mildly curious or the intensely interested, one of the most frequently asked questions about Joseph Smith is, what was he like? In our show today, we will attempt to capture several elements of the persona of Joseph Smith, his character, his personality, his nature.
Alexander L. Baugh.
I think it would be very difficult for any one of us today to kind of capsulize or to put into a nutshell Joseph Smith, what we kind of feel he was and consider him to be and think of him, what he looked like and his whole persona. For those, that generation of saints who knew him and knew him personally and had that interaction and had that association, that's much easier for them than us. And for us, I don't know if anything will ever capture what Joseph Smith really was, inside and out.
We begin with his physical characteristics. For his time and day, Joseph Smith was an unusually large man.
I think we get that genetic largeness passed down from his Smith ancestry. We know Lucy Mack was a rather tiny woman, but the Smiths were large men. I think it was Lucy Mack Smith said that I raised a family of boys all over the height of 6 feet.
Richard E. Turley, Jr.
To me, Joseph Smith was a remarkable man in all dimensions. He was an imposing physical specimen. For his day and age, he was a very large man. In the era in which we live, in which people are much larger generally than people of his age, we hear about his physical size and we think, well, he's a little above average. But during his day, he would have been well above average because people were much smaller back then. So just from his mere physical presence, he was a handsome, imposing man.
Now, many people gave a physical description of Joseph Smith. Among those, perhaps the most complete, was this one, given by Parley P. Pratt.
President Joseph Smith was in person tall and well-built, strong and active, of light complexion, light hair, blue eyes, very little beard, and of an expression peculiar to himself on which the eye naturally rested with interest and was never weary of beholding. His countenance was ever mild, affable, beaming with intelligence and benevolence, mingled with a look of interest and an unconscious smile or cheerfulness, and there was something connected with the serene and steady penetrating glance of his eye, as if he would penetrate the deepest abyss of the human heart, gaze into eternity, penetrate the heavens, and comprehend all worlds. I think what Parley's trying to say is he had an incredible magnetism about him. He was a normal-looking guy in so many ways. Through it all, Parley says, this man was remarkable. He was one of a kind.
Now, of course, one of the questions that naturally arises when we talk about Joseph Smith is, what did he look like? He died when photography was still in its infancy. So, are there any actual photographs of him out there?
Glenn M. Leonard.
One of the focuses that I've enjoyed is looking at the visual images and asking that same question, and a lot of people have done that. I think as I researched this topic, looked at images, I came back to the original sources, the earliest sources, which historians like to do. And I concluded after my study that there was no original photograph taken of the prophet Joseph Smith from life. As we look for the authentic image, we begin with Sutcliffe Maudsley. He was a profilist who only did the side of your head. He puts in such detail on the head and on the clothing, particularly of the women with their lace, and of the carpets and of the upholstery that's hanging at the windows, the drapes. You can expect from Maudsley some authentic settings and some precise images. And he had a great influence because he was the one whose images were multiplied through this lithographic process and were available widely.
The English convert Sutcliffe Maudsley produced several images of the Smith family in Nauvoo, including Emma and Hiram. Now, he did four images of Joseph Smith, the first one done in 1842.
The Maudsleys, because they were multiplied in many forms and fashions, one image with Joseph in his military uniform, others in his civilian clothes, others by other artists, have been dispersed. Even the original Maudsleys have been dispersed. The second image that you have to look at came that same year. Maudsley did his first image in June of 1842. The second image appeared in July of that year. This is by an unknown artist who was visiting in Nauvoo in July. We don't know who he was.
In 1842, another artist, a New Yorker named David Rogers, also painted Joseph and Emma Smith.
The painting of Joseph is a painting that captures the spirit of this man. It is precise. It is very close to the profile that Maudsley created, if you would line them up and compare them. But it gives a handsome Joseph. It gives a Joseph who shows the distinction of his calling. And for most people, that is the image they like because it shows him in full dress, his best dress, with the white tie and the dark suit. Emma Smith kept those portraits, of course, of her and Joseph. She was once asked, what did Joseph think of this portrait that Rogers has done? He said, well, I'm not sure I like it. It makes me look like a silly little boy, not a prophet. And Emma said, well, why? He said, well, he was trying to make me laugh. And so Joseph saw that experience in the painting. If we look at it, we don't see that because we don't know that. And it looks like a very dignified, neither sullen nor laughing, but a pleasant in-between, which you would want of a lightness in a photograph.
Another artifact, this one accurately capturing the visage of Joseph Smith, came not in life, but in death.
George Cannon made the death mask, at least that's the information we have. Once he got the image off the face, then he cast two masks from that image, and the original form was destroyed. But a death mask, which is just the front part of the face, captures the image of Joseph Smith, which artists and sculptors can look at in a three-dimensional way.
Sutcliffe Maudsley, David Rogers, and the death masks. These represent perhaps what are the most authentic original sources of what Joseph Smith looked like. Now, from them have evolved generation after generation of modern portrayals of the man.
David Rogers captured the man he saw, and he has no room to paint any exaggerations in because it's basically the face and the front of the body. Maudsley painted what he saw, the profile. And that's where you get that large chest, the back that's kind of arched. That's what he saw, and the literary descriptions describe that as well. Brigham Young and others gave descriptions that suggest this is what Joseph looked like. So those two artists, our best and only sources from life, are not exaggerating. They're picking it up the way they see it in their two different styles. So all of this information is being digested and used as sources for artists in our own time. And they put their own look to Joseph in the art, but they're looking at the source and trying to be as close to that as possible because those sources can be relied upon.
By genetic endowment then, Joseph Smith was a large man. But that wasn't all he inherited from his family. He was known to be a physically active individual.
The Smiths were hard workers, chopping wood, all the farm chores, construction, hauling rock. All of these things would require constant kinds of physical activity. So Joseph was used to that in his youth, really probably from his childhood through his youth into his manhood. He worked hard and would have developed a fine physical constitution. He talks about in Nauvoo going out to his farm. Well, what did he want to do out there? Well, he probably wanted to get away from the office a little bit and away from people and just kind of get his hands dirty and get back to those roots of his of just good, hard, manual farm labor. He really enjoyed that and probably missed that in his later years.
Another dimension to that physical activity was games. Now, there were no organized sports on the American frontier, but there were other ways that the Mormon prophet engaged in sport.
One thing he really enjoyed was what we would call, or they called, catch-as-catch-can, or kind of a freestyle wrestling. Not the Greco-Roman kind, where you could grab below the waist and that kind of thing, but these kinds of things where basically they would form a ring, a circle, and then the two contestants would kind of go at each other. You couldn't do strangleholds, but the object was not to pin them, but to actually just throw them from the ring or get them out of the ring. And I think Joseph just relished in this. It was something he dominated in. He was very good at it, and probably because he had probably a staunch, robust kind of figure that really catered to that kind of thing.
It was a crisis of faith for some to see a man who professed to be a prophet of God playing games.
Joseph once said, a prophet is only a prophet when he's acting as such. He has a right to be human, to enjoy being himself. Surely when he speaks as, you know, the prophet of the Lord or as in kind of a prophetic or leadership capacity, that's one thing. But he can be himself. He can enjoy life as he would like to live it himself. And I think this was very typical of Joseph. He wanted to certainly be a prophet to the people, but when he wasn't necessarily acting in that role as a prophet, he wanted to be himself. Joseph was playing one time with a bunch of young boys, and Hiram came by and said, "Joseph, you shouldn't be doing that. That's, you know, beneath your calling," kind of thing. And he was reported to have said to Hiram, "Brother Hiram, my mingling with the boys in a harmless sport like this does not injure me in any way. But on the other hand, it makes them happy and draws their hearts nearer to mine." I think another reason Joseph liked to engage in physical kinds of recreation and activity was the fact that he wanted to kind of dispel this sanctimonious, holier-than-thou attitude that sometimes the clergy and ministers seem to kind of portray.
In his 1838 history, Joseph Smith described himself as having a native, cheery disposition, hence his propensity for play. Now, as we've mentioned, that proved a challenge for some, even for some of the faithful.
Rachel Ridgway Ivins Grant, mother of Heber J. Grant, said that when she first met Joseph and Hiram, she said that Hiram seemed more like a prophet than Joseph because Hiram was more sedate and serious. And so I think that's interesting that even this persona that he had of kind of being an outgoing, kind of gregarious, kind of jovial person kind of went against the grain of some people who thought a prophet should be pretty subdued and mild-mannered and soft-spoken, and that was not Joseph Smith. And no way, shape, or form was he going to try to fit that mold.
Richard L. Bushman.
He was gregarious.
He was affiliative. He loved to be with people. He loved long church meetings where the brethren were together talking about plans for Zion. When he would sit down to dinner, it was rare that there would just be him and his family. There was always someone there wanting to be sealed and bonded to people. He wanted everyone kind of connected up. And that's sort of an extension, I think, of this friendship impulse.
Charisma has been defined as that quality that gives someone power or influence over other people, including large groups. Because of his warmth and his devotion to his people, and considering himself the friend of all mankind, Joseph Smith possessed that power.
As a person who was an organizer, who was able to appeal to people, get them together, and have them develop cities and sacrifice their own well-being for the well-being of the whole, he was a remarkable individual. He was very charismatic in that sense. When you consider that he was only 38 and a half years old at the time he died, and you look back at what he accomplished and what he suffered, he's extraordinary.
This is a quote from Howard Corey. Howard was a clerk or secretary to Joseph Smith. Here's what Howard said. "The prophet had a great many callers or visitors, and he received them in his office where I was clerking. Persons of almost all professions, doctors, lawyers, priests, and people seemed anxious to get a good look at what they then considered something very wonderful, a man who should dare to call himself a prophet, announce himself as a seer and ambassador of the Lord. Not only were they anxious to see, but also to ask hard questions in order to ascertain his depth. Well, what did I discover? He was always equal to the occasion and perfectly master of the situation and possessed the power to make everybody realize his superiority, which they evinced in an unmistakable manner. I could clearly see that Joseph was the captain, no matter whose company he was in. Knowing the meagerness of his education, I was truly gratified at seeing how much at ease he always was, even in the company of the most scientific or learned, and the ready offhand manner in which he would answer their questions."
John Taylor was a contemporary of Joseph Smith and himself an educated, intelligent, and capable man. He once said this about the Mormon prophet:
"Joseph Smith was ignorant of letters, as the world has it, but he was the most profoundly learned and intelligent man that I ever met in my life. And where did he get his intelligence from? Not from books, not from the logic or science or philosophy of the day, but he obtained it through the revelation of God made known to him through the medium of the everlasting gospel." I think Joseph actually had a high degree of confidence. I wouldn't go so far as to say arrogance so much as just the fact that he knew he'd been called by God. He knew his role. He knew the fact that God had approved of his course. And so he could stand his own in just about any situation.
Joseph Smith once declared that he would stand for a true principle even if he had to stand alone in it. He was a man of a strong will.
Joseph Smith could be a tough guy. He had to be. He was running a very difficult operation. It was largely through his power of will that things got done. He had to keep the show going.
In an earlier career, I was a lawyer, and I know from my own experience the kind of pressure that people feel when they have to engage in any type of legal encounter. At the time we started the Joseph Smith Papers Project, we thought that Joseph Smith may have had some 4 dozen experiences with the law during his short life of 38 and a half years. Now we know through the research of our legal team that he actually experienced some 200 plus legal encounters. I just want you to think for a moment what your life would be like if in the first 38 and a half years you had to engage with the law over 200 times. It takes an extraordinary character to endure that kind of pressure. One of my favorite statements of Joseph Smith comes in a letter he wrote that is now in the Doctrine and Covenants, a book of Latter-day Saints scripture. "Nevertheless, deep water is what I am wont to swim in. It has all become second nature to me." And that's how I view Joseph Smith. I view him as a strong swimmer, swimming upstream against the current in a world that is constantly flooding against him, and yet he prevails. He moves forward and succeeds in spite of all opposition.
Stephen C. Harper.
Joseph, in an interesting way, has part of his personality, and I love this part of his personality, that is steeled for battle. Joseph Smith is a good man to have if you're going to go counterculture and buck the prevailing dogmas. At the very same time, Joseph has a deeply sensitive side that doesn't like strife. He is a lover of mankind, a lover of people. And it pains him in some ways to be the one, the spearhead of a movement that is will raise hell.
The historical record contains several accounts of instances when Joseph Smith ended up in a physical confrontation because someone either threatened him or attacked him, verbally or physically.
Joseph could hold his own. He knew it, and he knew that he had a strong physical constitution, that he could exercise his will if he needed to or felt like he should. We know of an incident in Nauvoo again where he was visited by a minister who he treated him rather nicely, was very friendly and kind and cordial. I think he even put him up that night, and the next morning treated him to breakfast, and then the minister basically lashed out and called Joseph a fallen prophet, or not a prophet at all. He was a charlatan. He basically abused Joseph Smith in words, and Joseph wouldn't settle for that, and basically went after him. Boxed his ears, gave him a good old, quick physical beating, and kicked him out into the street. I think the prophet's enemies also recognized this is someone who might be tough to deal with. We have kind of an evidence of that just a little bit in the mobbing, the tarring and feathering on March 24th, 1832, when the mob ransacked the house. Joseph's fighter, and he immediately put up a struggle. I believe it was Warren Waste said that Joseph Smith was the strongest man he ever met. And, Joseph was not beyond defending himself, fighting, if you will, especially in that situation where he perhaps perceived his life was in danger, whereas others might just give in. Joseph gave a good struggle, a good fight.
One of the obstacles in the study of the life of Joseph Smith is imposing present-day cultural standards upon him. It has to be remembered that he was a man of the 19th century frontier.
Anyone who reads about the life of Joseph Smith has to not see him through kind of the glasses that we would see him through today. There was a whole different set of rules. There was a whole different type of behavior. This was a different type of America. And for anyone to judge Joseph Smith as being unchristlike in his expression of his hardiness and his physicality is completely wrong. This is a way men express themselves in terms of their convictions and their beliefs that they were acting appropriately under the circumstances.
Well, there was a time in writing this book when I began to say, I'm not sure I really would have liked Joseph Smith because he did bawl people out and didn't like people to cross him, and he could not bear insults of any kind. He's very sensitive to insults. That's part of the culture of that day that leads to duels for some people. But then I realized that this was a man who wore his heart on his sleeve, that his emotions as they came up in his heart got expressed. He didn't monitor them a lot. So if you annoy him, he'll let you have it. But the other side of that is if you won his affections, he would put his arms around you and embrace you. And people who talked, who met him, like my ancestor, Emerson Lyman, spoke of his the warmth and love that flowed from him whenever they met him. And that kind of person who lets you know exactly where you stand with them but can show deep affection is magnetic. That wonderful phrase, reproving betimes with sharpness when moved upon by the Holy Ghost, but then showing forth afterwards an increase of love towards him whom thou hast reproved, lest he should esteem thee thine enemy. That's Joseph Smith's personality. He rebuked with sharpness, and then love flowed out afterwards.
Because Joseph Smith loved his people, they loved him and revered him as a prophet of God.
I think years later, when people reflected on their impressions of Joseph Smith or what they remembered he looked like or kind of his nature and his demeanor, I think some of them became a little bit larger than life. And so we have to be a little bit careful there because we honored Joseph Smith so much. And the saints, were so endeared to him. They almost paint him as godlike. I mean, almost too good.
John W. Welch.
But Joseph Smith, in my opinion, was an ordinary man with an extraordinary calling. He did not always act in a perfect way, and he told people that they shouldn't require him to be a perfect person or even a prophet at every juncture in his life. But the more I have learned about Joseph Smith and the accusations that have been leveled against him, the more I learn and believe that he was very conscientious, that he did not break the law, that he acted within the normal kinds of cultural and social reactions, and even far better than most people who were living around him at that time. He might not live exactly the way we in the 21st century do, but then he didn't live in the 21st century. He lived on the wild frontier. I think we can understand that, well, he was human, yes, but not human after all. He was human because of all, and he was a divine prophet.
It was in 1823 when Joseph Smith was told that his name would be had for good and ill throughout the world. That has come to pass in a most remarkable manner. Next week on the Joseph Smith Papers, what has been said of him and what will yet be said of him. The impressions of a prophet. I'm Glenn Rawson. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to the Joseph Smith Papers here on the Mormon Channel, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.